You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a special episode of Star Wars Beyond the Films. I am one of your regular hosts, Nathan P. Butler. Mark will be back, of course, next time. This is a special episode taking a brief look back at the Star Wars panel from this year's Con Carolina's Science Fiction and Writing Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, back June 1st through 3rd. This is a convention that's been going on for quite a while now. I've actually been attending this one since 2004, with the exception of one year where I was sick. So it's been going on for a while, about a decade at this point. It has been Deep South Con. Usually, though, it is just Con Carolina's. You can find plenty of information about it at concarolinas.org. This year, Con Carolina's 2012 featured several guests of honor along with a whole lot of other guests and panelists, of which I was one of the latter. I was a panelist. The guests of honor this time included writer guest of honor Jack McDevitt, film and media guest of honor Jeffrey Combs, art guest of honor Robert James Ludtke, gaming guest of honor Janelle Jacques, if I pronounced that correctly, music performance guest of honor Michael Longcore, fan guest of honor Janine Spindlove, who you might know as Janine Garner, one of the hosts of Requiem of the Outcast back early on in Star Wars fan audio, back around 2003, 2004 or so. And of course, special guests like writer David Drake, actress Amber Chaney, film and media special guest Cleve Hall, actor Robert Leshock, and so on and so on. Not a big year for Star Wars guests, although next year, in 2013, the writer guest of honor right now is announced as Timothy Zahn. I'll keep you up to date as the list of guests shapes up for next year. Now, if you're familiar with me, you already know that I run StarWarsFanWorks.com, one of the places to bring Star Wars fan audio together, and because Rich Siegfried of Requiem of the Outcast, who doesn't really do a lot of Star Wars podcasting anymore, because he was a big mover and shaker early on in Star Wars fan audio with the rest of us, who kind of got me into going to Con Carolinas and wound up creating that as a place for people from the Star Wars fan audio community to get together outside of something like, say, a Star Wars celebration, Con Carolinas is sort of our home con, as it's often referred to. So I was there again this year, but not a lot of people in this case from the Star Wars fan audio community. Rich was there, Janine was there, I was there, and we had some of our listeners out there. Marcus Alexander was there, Chris Mervin was there, better known as Merv. It was cool, but it was a much smaller con in the sense of Star Wars presence than in previous years. In my case, I was on four panels this year. My first panel was at 3 o'clock on that Friday, the beginning of the con, June 1st, and that was the book launch panel, essentially author guests discussing their newest book. So I was there to talk about Wars, the Battle of Phobos, Preludes having a new edition, and Greater Good. And speaking of Greater Good, let me take a second and congratulate David Noche out there in the listening audience. He was the winner of our Facebook, Twitter, and email contest to win a signed copy of Greater Good. We'll be doing more of those types of things later on, especially as we get towards October, the 15th anniversary of the Star Wars Timeline Project, now the Star Wars Timeline Gold. We'll be putting out a contest to win, among other things, a signed copy of my Star Wars comic pack, that Star Wars Tales story along with the two action figures. Anyway, so that was my first panel, book launch, very straightforward type of panel, done it a couple of years now. Then after an hour break, at 5 o'clock, we had the Star Wars panel. We're going to come back to the description for that, because that is going to be the bulk of our content for this episode of Star Wars Beyond the Films. On Saturday, then, it was the return of the Podcasting 101 panel, which I seem like I've been on for years and years and years and years, with a lot of, you know, the regulars for that one, Stephen Ewan Cobb, Stuart Jaffe, Gail Z. Martin, Jamie McRoberts, yours truly back again. And then to round it out on Sunday, I took part in the self-publishing panel, which included Jim S. Bernheimer, myself, Robert James Ludtke, Edmund R. Schubert, James R. Tuck, and James Maxey. So it was a fun convention, got to do some panels, but like in the most recent years of Con Carolinas, I've stopped recording every single panel. There's a lot of people out there who like to record the panels and podcast them. We don't want to have a lot of duplicate content out there, of course. So in my case, I decided just to record the Star Wars panel this year to make it available to those of you out there who weren't able to attend Con Carolinas and might be interested in the kind of stuff that was talked about on the panel, especially if you've never been to a sci-fi convention before. So what you're about to hear is the Star Wars Fandom Panel. That's what it was called. Very generic name here. Part of the Star Wars and the Fan Groups track. The description officially was, discussion of Star Wars fandom and what's new in the Star Wars universe. Though we sort of went afield of that, it was much more general Star Wars talk than what's coming up that's new. Although you will catch a mention of Star Wars 1313. The panelists in this case, from left to right for the audience, were Tom Hutchins. Tom is the founder of the Mandalorian Mercs Costuming Group. Kathy Johnson, who was there representing both herself and Albin Johnson. He is the founder of the 501st Costuming Group. She is his wife and also a member of the 501st. They are the parents of Katie Johnson, and you'll hear her story actually in the panel. Katie, of course, being the inspiration for R2KT. Then there's me, founder of StarWarsFanWars.com, the Star Wars Timeline Gold, blah, blah, blah. You already know me. And on my other side, Sherilyn Lambeth, costumer extraordinaire and member of the Rebel Legion and 501st. So lots of costuming, all Star Wars fans who've been around the block when it comes to Star Wars panels over the years. Now, as always, when recording a panel, it's a little tough. So you will find that the volume varies quite a bit. I've tried to balance it out as best as I can. You'll wind up finding that my voice and Kathy's voice are quite a bit louder than Sherilyn's or Tom's. That's just because of the placement of the microphone. We will, from time to time, take questions or comments from the audience. I've tried to boost those up as much as possible so you can hear what the audience is saying. And there are a few instances where there are small hitches in the audio, but dropping out that little hitch in the audio would make a lot of the stuff around it unintelligible. So I've tried to keep this as clean as possible, although sometimes there are little blurbs that are just sort of the byproduct of trying to record live at a convention where there's no chance to say, hey, this messed up. Can you repeat that, please? Just doesn't quite work like that in a live setting. So, I hope you enjoy it. It is the Star Wars Fandom Panel from Con Carolinas 2012. This was 5 o'clock in the evening on June 1st, 2012. As I said, I hope you enjoy it, and my thanks to all of you who had the chance to attend the con and drop by to say hi. It was fun.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. This is the Star Wars Fandom Panel.
Okay, girls.
I will be the moderator for the panel. My name is Sherilyn Lambeth. I'm a longtime member of the 501st and the current public relations officer for the Carolina Garrison. I'll let each of our panelists introduce themselves.
I am Nathan P. Butler. This year actually marks the 15th year of my Star Wars Timeline Gold, the most comprehensive Star Wars chronology available anywhere. It's online at StarWarsFanWorks.com. I've been running Star Wars Fanworks since 2003. It's a home to bring together Star Wars fan audio. I've written for Star Wars Tales, helped on the dates for the Essential Atlas, including getting to set the date for Return of the Jedi, the actual in-universe calendar date for Return of the Jedi. Here mainly promoting non-Star Wars books of mine, but been in podcasting also as well for about 10 years in Star Wars. So this is common occurrence to see me sitting here on a Star Wars panel.
I'm Kathy Johnson. My husband, Albin Johnson, was also supposed to be on this panel. Al founded the 501st Legion in 1997, and we got married in 2004. So therefore, I now know the entire history of the 501st Legion very well. quiz me. And, you know, the rest is history. So I've been doing costuming. I costumed myself, was a member of the 501st, actually before I met Al, so there you go.
What garrison were you with?
I was with the Empire City Garrison in New York. And then Al stole me and made me move to the South.
Interestingly enough, so was I. But
interestingly enough, I lived here for 6 years before I became a member of the Carolina Garrison.
Yeah, we finally talked you into it.
Yeah, you finally talked me into it.
I finally got drafted.
Yeah, I got drafted.
My wife's saying she only started work. Behind every good leader is...
Yes.
Or I should say next to every good leader. My name's Tom Hutchins. I'm the founder and CEO of the Mandalorian Mercs. Most people know me as my stage name, Mandalorian Uniter, who is now a canon character. Thank God.
You're so freaking awesome.
Yeah, that's it was mentioned in the Essential Guide to Warfare.
Awesome.
Yep. Which is pretty cool. Jason's awesome.
Yep. That is awesome.
So... But they didn't show pictures, so it's just the name.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Well,
though.
That's a start.
It's a start.
Hey, that's how the 501st started getting
you know,
canon.
But anyway, yes, I'm the founder of the Mandalorian Mercs. I build Mandalorian armor for myself and for pretty much anybody that pays me to do it. I do it for my clan members here locally for free. So
that sounds bad, by the way.
What?
Clan members.
We're not garrisons or bases, we're clans. That's what Mandalorian.
I know, but
we can trust me. That came up one time. One of my friends at work, we're sitting there eating lunch, and because I work for KNW cafeterias, and we're sitting there, And we're, you know, we're sitting in the cafeteria, and she's like, so how's things going with your clan? And I'm like, yeah, it's probably not something you want to say out loud in a place where people might not understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
She's like, don't you wear the white armor? I'm like, you're doing this on purpose.
Nice. That's now, did your Mandalore survive in the Essential Guide to Warfare?
He did survive. He led the return movement and actually rebuilt the Mandalorians post, post the whole thing in... Knights of the Old Republic. He rebuilt the entire Mandalorian, you know, power again. So it's perfect.
See, they love you much more. Yeah. Much more.
They just made the 501st a bunch of child killers.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, it's just Anakin.
Yeah. No, that was the 501st Legion that stormed the Jedi Temple and took out the baby.
The only children you saw being killed was by Anakin. Those could have been all the younglings.
That's a good point.
But now, the kids will always know you because of Rex. And
I can tell you right now, we show that scene to our kids all the time, and they are well behaved.
This is what will happen.
I have lots of friends in the 501st. They listen to Daddy most of the time.
Most of the time. Well, speaking of Star Wars fandom, obviously it's a huge following. You know, Star Wars, here we are. Star Wars is going on 47 years, almost 40 years. And we have thousands of members in the 501st and many hundreds of others in other fan groups. And I'll ask each of the panelists, Tom, starting with you, what do you think it is about Star Wars that inspired such fandom? So many years later, here we are.
Well, for one thing, I think one thing that inspires it is it's always kept very fresh. There's always something new coming out from the franchise. All the time. You know, you got Clone Wars cartoons, you get books that come out all the time, you got the young readers books, you got reference books, you got so much stuff coming out that there's no way anybody can get tired.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. It's all good. But there's just always so much stuff coming out that there's really no way that it can ever really get dry at this point. You know, I think that's what inspires a lot of people is that, you know, just new material at all times.
Honestly, I think it's just taken on a life of its own at this point. I mean, it's, especially with fandom, it's become more than the movies. I'm a prime example. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. I wasn't.
You know Nathan's podcasting.
I know. It's okay. It'll get out eventually.
The divorce papers
will
be there next week.
No, Al knew this. I actually, you know, you guys joked about me being drafted into the Carolina Garrison. I was drafted into the 501st. The Empire City Garrison was all male, and they needed, well, Sherilyn and Cricket and Cammy were honorary members, but they had no female membership and decided that they needed one, and I hung out with these guys. They were my friends. They bought me armor, came to my house, fitted my armor, and made me do at least one event so that I could be officially... And because they had been in the Legion since the beginning, I actually got my approval into the 501st within 30 minutes, which is unheard of to get it that fast, even at that time. But it is so much more than the movies at this point. It's a community. Even within the groups, the Mando Mercs, the 501st, the Rebel Legion, Jedi Assembly, I know I'm missing a few, there's lots of us now, but we all work with each other. You know, there's no real animosity unless somebody's being a real jerk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's usually the one person being a real jerk, and you're like, you know, it's like a playground. Nobody wants to play with you when you're being nasty. But for the most part, it's a tight-knit community. We watch out for each other. We have each other's backs. You know, Rose Parade happened, and can't remember the guy's name who was emceeing it on Home and Gardens. Made a comment about, wow, I can't believe we got all these guys out of their parents' basements march in this parade.
What do you say? These guys look like they need a job.
Oh, is that? That's what it was. These guys look like they need to get a job. Yeah. I can't remember what his name is. It shows you how important he was. And all of the fan groups, now that was just the 501st who was asked to march in that parade, but all of the fandom was like, are you kidding me? You know, we have doctors, we have lawyers, we have policemen, we have firefighters, we have people stationed in Iraq right this second who are members of this, you know, fraternity. And how dare you? So I think it goes beyond the movies at this point. It really does. It's a community, it's a welcoming, it's... Nobody feels left out for the most part, you know.
It's a culture, really.
Yeah. We made our own giant clique. No jocks allowed.
That's funny you say no women are initially in the garrison you were in, and that's kind of the empire, isn't it? I mean, depending
actually,
on the time period, for a
true.
While.
Yeah,
not now.
But not even just in fandom. The actual movies, the majority of the stunt people who
the
were
stunt
in,
people,
the,
that's true.
In the armor yeah. were women.
There's
why?
Huge,
because women move better in the armor than men do.
There's a huge profile article in the new the Essential Guide to Warfare that it's a female stormtrooper telling her story.
Her story.
A female stormtrooper.
It's about time. Yeah. It is about time.
It's actually really awesome. But it also says there's no boot plates and no midriff showing.
No.
Can't do that. No more femme troop.
But the femme trooper thing was a joke.
Oh, I know.
Nobody took it seriously. It was like when me and my friends did trooper groupies. Nobody expected that to be canon. Apparently it is now. It's in a comic book and is canon now. But we didn't expect that to be canon. It was a joke. And then, you know, and that goes back to the sometimes you have one guy who's a jerk. You know, you'll have people who are costume Nazis, we refer to them lovingly as, who, oh, it has to be by the book or it's never going to happen. And unfortunately, that's what prompted the Mando Mercs to become the Mando Mercs, which I'm really glad because your organization's fantastic. But I can tell you right now, that was not Al's philosophy on it, because Al was all about, he's a one-legged stormtrooper.
Oh, I know.
He's all about being inclusive. Yeah. And but you have some people who are like, no, if you don't look exactly like that character, you can't do it. BS. If you're having fun doing it, if you're having fun doing it, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, else have fun.
And it's a hobby.
Yeah.
It's a hobby. It's not your life.
And I would say that's probably where it gets a lot of the longevity from, too. I mean, he set out to create essentially a modern myth. There's a great documentary, Star Wars and Philosophy. It's him with Bill Moyers, it's just two guys sitting there talking the mythology of Star Wars and why it was created the way that it was. That kind of got it going, but they're right. It's the fan groups in a lot of ways. It's the fans who've been able to pick up different threads of fandom and head it off into fan films, fan audio, costuming, and so on to really... There's a way to get into Star Wars for just about everybody. Now, especially, the EU, the Expanded Universe stuff, has taken the approach of, we've told so many stories in the same time period with the same people, there's no way to do anything but go to new genres or new time periods. So we've got Legacy set 137 years after A New Hope. We've got the Tales of the Jedi and Knights of the Old Republic and Knight Errant stuff in different time periods. They're jumping into horror novels with Death Troopers. And you had Red Harvest, another horror novel. They've done sort of the pop spy thriller type thing. They now have a character who's basically Star Wars James Bond, who is in a series called Agent of the Empire. We just found out last night they finally released that the Star Wars 1313 thing that was being discussed as this new Star Wars gaming franchise that's supposed to be coming essentially sounds like a game in the same vein as a TV series, a live-action TV series they've been talking about as impossible to make on a budget right now, where it's level 1313 of Coruscant, the seedy underworld, and it's not a Jedi, it's not a character we've seen before, but it's someone who's involved in the criminal element and such. There's so many different ways that they can take it, and so many different ways to get into it, that it's sort of this self-perpetuating kind of machine. It's one of those things where if it gets to a point where it does somehow die, I would almost say that for Star Wars to die, there's got to be some kind of scandal. It can't just be that the interest disappears or the storytelling potential disappears.
George
it would
Lucas
have to be George Lucas's molesting children.
Yeah.
Or Jar Jar's meant to be a racial stereotype in the treatise on why, or something.
Here's
insane.
Here's the memo.
Yeah, exactly. No, we want him to talk like this because we don't like this group. It's not going to happen. It's going to continue.
It will. You have a question?
Well, the 1313 thing. Do you know if it's taking place before the Republic took Coruscant or not?
That I'm not certain of, because I haven't had a chance to look into it much. It literally was as I was turning off the computer last night to get packed to come here. It was, now they're announcing it. They're going to announce more information about it and apparently show at least, I don't know if it's art or footage, at E3, which is right as everybody gets back home from this, it's time to boot up the computer and check out the E3 stuff. Yeah. So we'll know within a week or so.
Here's a thought, genre books. What were the names of those?
The horror books were Death Troopers and Red Harvest. They've done sort of a bodyguard type thing called Shadow Games. And the one that's more like a James Bond type of thing is, it's a comic series in that case, starring a guy named Jahan Cross. It's called Agent of the Empire. Those are probably the most, and there's been a lot of out-of-the-box examples, but I think those are probably the farthest afield from standard, you know, Luke, Leia, Anakin, and so forth. You know, got to kill the one Anakin because they don't want to confuse it with the other Anakin, all that kind of insanity.
You're hurting my head.
There's a lot. I said 15 years and I'm still not done with the timeline. I've got every comic. My collecting goal was to get every comic and every novel in its first official release, not necessarily first print, but first form. So if it was the old Ewok series, which is incredibly hard to come by, I want the original issue of Ewoks, even though they suck badly.
I was about to say, you're a braver man.
Yeah, it's sort of a masochist in collecting. And I finally pretty much finished it up, but it took a while. It takes up a lot of space. It's huge, which is great because it gives you a lot of new ways to get in, though I'd almost be afraid of being a new fan. I mean, wouldn't you kind of, with as much stuff as there is out there about Star Wars, wouldn't you almost be afraid of being brand new coming into Star Wars, not knowing where to start? Where do you get people going on it? It's we get asked that all the time. Where would you start reading in Star Wars? I'd almost say
anywhere
is fine, but don't ever expect now to catch up on everything. It's just there's too much.
Yeah, I've been a Star Wars fan for a while, but I just jumped into both recently. But I jumped in at the end of my X-Wing series, which I love.
Oh yeah, yes, Stackpole and Austin
are
amazing.
And the thing is also that there's something out there for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, depending on what your particular style is, what your particular wants or needs are in a book, that's the great thing about having that much out there is you can really find just about anything.
Well, and that's the thing. There are the films, there are the books, there are the comic books, there are the video games.
I'm still waiting for like a Harlan Quinn-style romance novel with like a shirtless guy on the cover.
A shirtless stormtrooper maybe with just his helmet on.
You know, without the black bodysuit, though. Because there's not a man alive who looks sexy in just black underwear.
Oh, no, there's nothing sexier than a guy in his black bodysuit and mariachi boots. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the great thing about armor, man. You look ripped. This is all built in there. You look amazing. And then it comes off and you're like, oh, put it back on.
Do you know how hard that is to do with armor?
No, actually, I don't. That's
scary.
No. I don't know that.
See how there's something for everybody. One of the podcasts that I host is called, me and a guy named Mark Hurlman host a podcast called Star Wars Beyond the Films. It's like my 6th, 7th in 10 years. I don't know how many stinking podcasts we've done of different Star Wars types. But that particular one, we had a discussion that a lot of podcasts didn't want to touch recently on racial issues, both in-universe, are there racial stereotypes, and is there a difference in how race is presented as far as the way that they set up the publishing schedule. We did the same thing on sexism just recently. It's an episode that actually doesn't go online till next Wednesday at StarWarsReport.com if you want to hear it. But it's basically what we found is there's a lot of different styles of storytelling, but there really are not a lot of times where we see primary characters who are human, who aren't white, or who are human and aren't men.
Mm-hmm.
There's something for everybody genre-wise, but there's not a lot of stories that focus on what I would almost, in American society, we often refer to as minority groups. So that's the one place that diversity just doesn't seem to have hit, is who do you make your protagonist? Kara Holt in Knight Errant, Jaina Solo getting one book with New Jedi Order Dark Journey is about it, you know? So it's kind of surprising in that sense, I guess.
Now, kind of touching on all of this that we've been discussing, and I don't want anybody to have to tell their age, but how many folks here remember seeing Star Wars for the first time when it first came out?
Oh, in the theater?
In the theater.
The first movie?
In the first movie.
I wasn't born. I wasn't born.
I wasn't either. It was a year before.
Oh, yeah, baby. Yeah. I was 79.
I was 11 years old when the movie came out. Some friends went to see it. We didn't know what scared me to death when I first saw the commercials of Star Wars. They didn't have the original soundtrack wasn't out yet. You know, it's a guy's voice, you know, it's got a radio voice.
In a world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I saw Chewbacca for the first time, I thought that was Bigfoot.
Yeah.
You know, so,
I saw him real quick. Right? That must have been a bad guy, you know? You hear roaring, like, oh my god.
Oh yeah, that's terrifying to a kid.
I was terrified as a kid seeing that, and then, of course, we see the movie. It's amazing. But
you
all we had at the time was Bionic Man, Planet of the Apes, you know, things like that. We didn't have Star Wars, because it was pre-Star Wars. Later on, and, you know, of course, we grew up with the original fandom as far as when we saw the original movies. Now, I don't think you were probably even alive during the first film.
The first film, I was born in 79. So I was the baby that I would tell the parents, get the baby out of the theater for Empire Strikes Back, apparently.
Right. So what age were you that drew you in to what you're doing now? As far as what was it that kind of
For me, it was when I was, like I said, my mom apparently took me to see Empire Strikes Back when I was less than a year old, or right. I haven't the slightest memory of it. I got into it with Return of the Jedi when I was little. Lots of toys. They finally came on HBO, and we had a VCR to record it, that kind of stuff. Really, I mean, it was those types of things and the toys that got me first into it, thanks to my parents, in a sense, getting me interested, which is weird because they're not really huge sci-fi fans or anything. And that, in a sense, kind of formed the way I looked at a lot of stuff, right and wrong, good and evil, there is a division, that sort of thing. So, and that's a sort of formed my own ethical background. And then when I really got into the stuff that I'm doing now, like the stuff that got me a chance to write for Tales and the podcast and all that kind of stuff, that was really 92. I wound up going into a bookstore with my dad, and holy crap, these are Star Wars books. Heir to the Empire was there in paperback. Dark Horse Rising had just come out in hardback. Snatched those suckers up, and it's kind of that was all she wrote. And I've just sort of – I've been lucky in that I didn't miss much except the early Marvel and early Del Rey stuff, so I was able to pick those up later without breaking the bank to do it.
I'm sure you broke the bank on those Ewok ones. Though.
Yeah, the Ewok ones, yeah. And now I wound up, I bought a lot, so I've got like 5 spare Ewok comics just sitting there at home going like, does anybody need, if you need it, old Ewoks comics, StarWarsFanWars.com, find the email link. I've got them. You can have them for cheap. I just have them stuck in a corner. Set. Almost got like half of extras now.
How much do you but, want?
Ask me out here.
Okay. This is not the eBay
channel.
But I got
it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's later. Yes,
it's hard to find, but once you find them, it's hard to get rid of them. Ewoks,
no, it's
anybody
not done
them?
Yet.
Sorry. Valid question. Well, Kathy,
she's our timekeeper.
Yeah, she is our timekeeper.
You're supposed to count everybody, too.
Well, count all people. And
when I
tell
people laugh, you can tell who's worked on us before.
It's the 40.
Exactly.
Like I said, they're 5, and yeah. I apologize.
But you know, you said you weren't a Star Wars fan starting out. So, but when you got into the 501st, did you become a Star Wars fan?
I mean, I like the movies. I enjoy watching them. My kids have seen them now. I'm a good parent, and the prequels. They can get in. They can delve into that when they're old enough to handle it. When they're old enough to hate Jar Jar Binks, they're old enough to watch the prequels.
If we would have had no Jar Jar Binks, it was another good movie. I don't
mind you going
first.
Okay, question for you. Which did you see first?
I actually saw the original first.
Okay.
Gotcha.
I was going to say, because I know a lot of kids who like the prequels better, because, of course, the CGI is better, and they don't know any better.
They
don't know any better.
Although, I will say my favorite is Revenge of the Sith now.
Yes, of course.
So... It's changed.
I liked Revenge of the Sith. I got to go and see that thanks to my connections.
I got to see that.
Yeah, you were with us. We got to see that actually about a week or two before it was released to the public. And I loved it. My husband picks apart every movie he ever sees, ever. So it was hard riding home with him because it was, they did this wrong and they did that wrong. Because, you know, those first 3 movies for him were... the be all end all. They, you know, him and his brothers went to see it 7-8 times in the theater because there was no DVD to buy, there was no Blu-ray to buy. There, like you said, you waited for it to come on TV and you put in the VHS tape and recorded it and hoped that nobody ever dubbed over it or that the rewinding machine didn't yank
it.
Pop the tab out of there.
My sisters were awful. They put tape over it. They figure out ways. They were awful people. But I love Star Wars. But when it comes to what people typically think of a Star Wars fan, I wouldn't define myself like that. I don't... it. Like I said, it's my hobby. It's not my everything. But that's because I'm married. I have 5 children. I go to school full time. You know, I have a house to keep up. I have a large extended family that I take care of. I have a mother-in-law who has dementia that I take care of. So I have a lot of other things going on, and this is where I come to have a great time and to enjoy myself. But I don't feel the need to watch Star Wars over and over and over again until I have it memorized, every line or anything like that. But I love the movies. I think they have a great message. I love that my kids love it. My 16-year-old can quote just about every line from that and, amazingly, Terminator. Because that's what Daddy thought good bedtime movies were.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Nice.
And aliens.
You and my wife would get along very well because you sound exactly like her. She's not a big
Star Wars fan. She's an awesome woman, obviously.
She's not really a big Star Wars fan, but she, you know, she gets in her set of armor and she'll troop and have fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but she never goes out and buys Star Wars games. She never really watches Star Wars on TV.
People are so sad when they come to our house. Because they think, oh, we're going to Albin's house.
It's the Mecca.
It's going to be amazing. And they walk in and we have one print over our couch that was signed by Dave Dorman with my husband's name spelled wrong, which is hilarious because he asked how to spell my name, but not his. And I just love that. We have a bunch of Stormtrooper and R2-D2 stuff in the garage in my husband's area. Not that I've ever told him he couldn't have Star Wars stuff in the house, but that's all he collects is anything that says 501st Legion on it at this point, and R2-D2 stuff because of R2-KT. We have a giant R2-D2 that lives in our living room, so I guess that's kind of cool. We do have a lot of Spider-Man stuff, but that's because that little girl in the blue dress right there thinks she is Spider-Man. And then we have a lot of R2-KT artwork. Sunio Sanda has sent us original artwork of R2-KT and... a bunch of other artists, Kirk Lizard, and Gina Kennedy has done original. Actually, I've gotten to the point now where if I don't get original artwork at Dragon Con, I get kind of sad. Because every time we go, somebody's got something, some other R2-KT, and it's just awesome to get stuff that's about her. So, which I guess I should explain what R2-KT
is. Right, yeah, I was about to say. Is everyone familiar with who R2-KT is? Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody need me to explain what R2-KT is?
Just then I'm showing sure.
I was going to say, when our daughter Katie got a diffuse pontine intrinsic brainstem glioma when she was 7 years old, which is a really, really bad brainstem tumor, she told her dad, I want a R2-D2 to watch over me like R2-D2 watched over Padme in Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones, yeah, the second one.
I might start getting them mixed up in my head. And so my husband went on to the R2 Builders Group, which is another brother-sister organization of the 501st and the Mando Mercs and other groups, and said, okay, guys, I want to make a droid. And all of the R2 Builders went, you're hilarious. He's like, I've got about 6 months. And they're like, it's not going to happen. It takes 5 years and about $5,000 on average.
Oh, and probably
not that no, really. It still costs.
It can cost a lot, but not that bad.
Oh, taking 5 years?
Yeah.
No, but the type of droid that they wanted to build for her.
We don't actually laugh at people who say.
Oh no! They were joking with him. They, you know, he has a friendship with them. It wouldn't be laughing at somebody who they didn't know.
There's more to the story.
Yeah. So the guys turned around and donated all of the parts, the top end parts, the best parts you can possibly imagine, and Jerry Green and
Andy Schwartz
built it in.
Well, actually, what they did was.
Well, I was going to get to that in 1 second. It took them 12 months to build the R2 that lives in my living room. Andy, knowing that it was going to take them that long and that Katie didn't have that long, took his R2, his baby, and painted all the blue parts pink. And then had Sherilyn drive her down to Columbia from Washington, D.C. And that R2 sat in Katie's room. Until she passed. Now R2-KT does hospital visits, Make-A-Wish functions, and just about anything you could think to promote pediatric cancers. And normally she would be here this weekend, but seeing as I am both Kathy and Albin and babysitter, I couldn't bring her too. So there was only so much I could juggle this weekend. But she's amazing, and Katie got sick. We didn't know how we were going to pay her medical bills. By the time Katie passed away, we had $15,000 worth of medical bills. That was with some of the best insurance you can get. My husband was a state employee, so he had really good insurance. We didn't pay a dime because the Mando Mercs weren't around at that point. But the Rebel Legion, the 501st, Jedi Assembly, and many other groups did fundraiser after fundraiser after fundraiser after fundraiser, and we never paid for anything. No, we can't go home yet, baby.
That shows also that it's not just a costume here, it's a family.
It is a family. I mean,
we're kind of doing the same thing again for a little girl now, Leia Eskenazi.
Yeah, Princess Leia. I always call her Princess Leia. Princess Leia, she's in California.
Yeah,
she's in San Diego.
She has mitochondrial disease.
Yeah, and we are forming up. I mean, it's small things. Like, Sherilyn called me right after Katie got diagnosed and said, well, what can we do? And I think she pulled go, well, can you fundraise? Can you do this? Can you do that? I said, I need somebody to paint my kitchen and mow my lawn. 1 week later, the Carolina Garrison, in full, showed up at my house, mowed my lawn, and painted my kitchen. And took my kids on a shopping spree and just, yeah, brought us dinner and just, I mean, amazing, amazing stuff in 1 week. And there, I think literally it was the entire garrison from Raleigh to the Low Country. Everybody was at our house. And I'm sure that the Southern California Garrison has done stuff for Princess Leia.
Oh, yeah.
And I know the Mando Mercs have done tons for her. And that's what we do when somebody, you know, we do stuff for sick kids all the time.
Yeah.
But when it's one of ours, we go absolutely crazy.
So we've had members have their houses catch on fire.
We've had members donate kidneys to other members they don't know. We've had that happen twice, where somebody said, okay, I'll go get tested. Had no idea who the other person was in another garrison hundreds of miles away. And they're like, oh, you're a match. Okay, done. Let's go. And they flew to, I know one flew to Ohio.
Yeah.
I don't know about the...
I can't remember with the... Yeah.
But, I mean, you want to talk about getting personal within a family group. It doesn't matter. I mean, a 501st member can put on Facebook, hey, I'm going to be in Germany in 2 weeks. The German garrison will pick them up from the airport, have a place for them to stay, take them to all the best restaurants. You know, you have a family wherever you go. And it's awesome. You know, doesn't matter, you know, who you are, but don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
That's what it all boils down to.
We remember the good and the bad.
He's always here for 3 weeks in August.
Oh, okay.
That's like,
you know.
That's another, you know, Pascal comes in from Belgium?
Sweden. Yeah.
No. Switzerland.
Swiss Garrison. Swiss Garrison.
And the Carolina Garrison drops everything to hang out with them.
My wife does a big thing for him, but I want to. He loves Southern conversation.
Oh, he's hilarious. He's like the most... Actually, my personal favorite is the Italian Garrison, which Giancarlo isn't here yet, but he'll be here this weekend. You want to talk about the most redneck group of people on the planet? It is the Italian Garrison. Garrison Italica. They all have Confederate flag tattoos.
What?
Yeah. Because they do Civil War reenacting in Italy.
So they do spaghetti westerns still.
They do spaghetti westerns in Italy. And they will come up to you.
Speaking of that, the Hatfield McCoy series.
That was in Romania.
Romania, and the guys went out, the reenactors from Italy. And
did they?
Went there to do the ramming of some of the battles as a war.
Oh, yeah. They'll come up like at the Pasadena Rose Bowl parade. They came up to my husband and said, "We are what you call good old boys." And he's like, no.
In their Italian accent.
And they're very thick Italian accent. I mean, you'd actually back up a little bit if you saw these guys coming at you. Because they're like, what? They're, almost all of them are over 6'3".
Yeah.
And they're all wearing leather motorcycle jackets.
Yeah.
Jeans and white t-shirts with their big Confederate flag tattoos. And you're like... And then they have these thick Italian accents. You're like, this is hurting
it's
my
not
head.
Right. This doesn't look right.
Yeah, this does not comprehend.
Ventriloquist practical joke.
Oh, yeah, you would think, but after 8 years, I'm pretty convinced.
Hey, Miss, what?
That's really just how they are. And they're awesome guys. I mean, really. I mean, I have yet to meet anybody who isn't just awesome. I mean, there's a few. But
it's very small.
It's a very small amount, and I usually just flick them and make them go away. Or at least out of my vicinity. I can't flick them out of the 501st, but I can flick them away from me.
Phantom's kind of like that, though, for Star Wars at least.
Got more bylaws.
I would say it is. It's kind of there's the every now and then you'll run into the people who are being the jerks, but it's usually only a small handful. And at one time, I'm sure I was one of them. Mm-hmm. But I think you hit a point. You hit a point where you basically have to realize what she had said, where it's a hobby. If you're not having fun with it, if you're letting it stress you out, you're doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. And once you hit that point, all the stress of it, all the things that make a person want to be a jerk or assert some kind of superiority over someone else on a forum that you've never met, mm-hmm. starts to fade away.
Keyboard commandos.
Yep. Yeah. Star Wars is very good at the communities usually are willing to kind of bring people in and put up with that kind of stuff long enough for people to finally get out of that stage. It's really only the ones who come in either full force or come in and just are stuck in that, like they just can't develop at all, that wind up being the jerks, but they usually burn out on the Star Wars stuff within a couple years anyway, and they disappear. It's like a self-cleaning system in a lot of ways.
That's what Al will tell people all the time, especially people who are, you know, garrison commanders or stuff. He'll get emails and calls. Even now that Al really is just a figurehead, he's not the LCO anymore, he'll still get phone calls going, oh, he's being so mean to me. I can't believe this. And I was like, just give him 5 minutes. And he's going to burn, either he's going to burn himself out or he's going to realize that he's being ridiculous about this. I mean, what have we always said? We dress up as action figures.
Plastic people.
We're plastic people. We sound like Tupperware in a dryer when we walk. You cannot take yourself that seriously. If people saw the armor, I mean, no joke, at C5, people saw the armor my husband started the 501st with and were shocked.
Because it was awful.
But still, when we met Mark Hamill, he looked at our armor and went, this is amazing. This is better than what we had in the movies. You know? You guys have no... I mean, look at the movies and look at the, you know, costuming. It's really not that great. It's great for the time, and it's great for what it was, and it gives you that illusion.
And editing and stuff made it
real. Yeah. But if you look really carefully, the armor's like this thick.
Yeah.
It's like plaster casts. And they don't have any back pieces to their legs so they can run. There's all kinds of little tricks. There's certain parts where they're not wearing their upper armor so that they shoot just their legs so they can run and move. And you don't realize that. And people are so, I have to be perfect. It has to be exact. It's like, no, you don't, because kids like this don't care.
We didn't care when we were kids.
Hey. And that's what it's about. I mean, my kids just spent, 20 minutes outside with a girl dressed up like My Little Pony. And thought that she was My Little Pony. And that's what it's supposed to be about. It's, you know, I look at it as... Well, I look at it as I'm doing it for kids. I'm doing it for the awe effect in adults who look at it and go, wow, that's awesome. I don't do it for other costumers. Because if I did, I'd drive myself crazy. I'm a big believer in fun foam, puff paint, and glue. If it works and it looks close enough... That's all that matters. And that's why I love the Mando mercs, because you don't get that as much in the Mando mercs, because you guys are, the whole point is to do what you want to do with it. Make your own design, do your own costume. Yeah.
Yeah, but Thomas, hey, I'm still taking the Mando.
But it's doing your own thing that I think is awesome. And unfortunately, that was part of the reason the Mando mercs broke off was... There were people within the 501st who didn't want them to do that. And which I personally think is ridiculous.
But it spawned a good thing.
But it did. Yeah. It spawned a great thing. The Mando Mercs is a fantastic thing. Same thing with the Rebel Legion.
Yeah.
The Rebel Legion started as an offshoot of the 501st as well because they wanted to do the good guys. And originally, Al's idea was to have... Well, according to George Lucas, and I quote... From C-3, stormtroopers are good people. They just work for a very bad man.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That was...
Just like in history.
Yeah.
Same way.
So the stormtroopers aren't the bad guys. They just get bad orders.
They're good people who have to do bad things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it always is. That's why they always miss.
Let her go.
No, excuse me. We have excellent accuracy as long as it's not a hero.
Well, you know, in the various fandoms, you know, I'm sure you've probably all seen that cartoon, and the one guy's like, wow, we were growing up, we played stormtroopers in red shirts. And the other guy's like, how do you play that? And it's like, I'll show you. The stormtroopers.
Pew, 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 pew.
Oh, I missed. And the red shirt goes, that's where I got diamond.
Yeah, that's hilarious. When the prequels came out, when the 501st, there was a lot of, my clone looks better than your clone.
Yeah.
In other words, because we had no real... anything really go by, except for CGI.
Yeah.
But there was that little thing going on for a while there where mine looks better than yours.
I actually got to meet George Lucas, and he's actually pretty damn hilarious. when he's in his especially when he's in his element. But he looked at some of the clone trooper armor and he's going, that's pretty damn amazing, seeing as there was no real armor. But then again, this is the same guy who went up to the map, the 501st map that has all of the garrisons, and went, why don't we have anybody in India? There's a lot of people there. Why don't we have anybody in India? Why don't we have anybody in Tunisia? They could just dig up armor there. Make a set. And Steve Sansweet, the head of fan relations, had to explain to him that we don't draft. It's a volunteer organization. We can't go into countries, hand them a set of armor, and go, you are now a 501st member. But yeah, he just couldn't grasp why we didn't have... We're like, aren't you impressed with what we... Do have 43 countries, 5,000 plus active members.
We have one in Antarctica.
Yeah, we have a guy in Antarctica, for goodness sakes.
Well, I think George actually answered that question on that interview with Oprah. And I think that's one of the things when you, if you watch, that's actually probably one of the best interviews I've ever watched with George Lucas. Oprah did an interview of him. It was the last interview that was done. I think it was either late last year or early this year.
It's only this year.
Yeah. And he said that as the guy that, you know, I made the movies, he said, but I never got the magic. I never got to watch them like the fans get to watch them. He says, I never got the magic that, you know, that the fans get. He said, to me, they're just things that I made. But they don't give me that sense of magic that they give the fans. Yeah. And I think that is the best explanation for George Lucas, right there.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, he doesn't get what he is not... the passionate person about, you know, why we get mad when things change. Why did the people who saw the original movies get mad at the prequels? He doesn't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Because to him, these are just movies that he's made. He's like, they look great
for me.
They're
his job.
Yeah, I made this movie. I spared no expenses. Awesome movie.
That's like somebody getting mad at somebody for not doing an Excel table the exact way that they wanted them to do. And the guy who's doing the table is like, I can't understand why you're getting this passionate about an Excel table.
Exactly.
It's his job. I mean, he's not going to get bent out of shape. But he did, I mean, Al actually had an amazing moment with him at Pasadena because he went to see the 501st muster. He went to see them all lined up and took pictures with the 501st and sent a photo to every single person who marched. Which I thought was very nice. A signed photo. But they pulled Al out of the group and brought him to the front of the group, asked him to take his helmet off and get pictures of the two of them standing together. And he actually turned to Al and went, this is amazing. You've done a good job here. And he goes, you must be a proud papa. That's what he said. You must be a proud papa. He goes, I guess grandpa, because this wouldn't have happened without you. And he kind of gave him this look like, oh, yeah, I guess. But that it goes back to what you're saying. But then Al ruins it by telling him that Katie really liked Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
He's like, just so you know, my daughter Katie really liked Howard the Duck. He's like,
go away from mine now.
Yeah, you're done now. Here's your picture. Go away. They actually joked that they thought that Lucasfilms, when they got everybody to California, was going to ask for their armor back and give them cease and desist letters.
Because
technically we are all in really bad trademark infringement.
We're walking copyright infringement.
Yeah, big time.
Mentioned the whole magic thing versus what they had versus what the fans have been able to create. If you go back, I mean, you'd almost have to look online for this thing. I don't know if it's still around. I think it is. At one point, it was on StarWarsWithAZ.com, StarWarsWithAZ.com. It's a thing called Deleted Magic. And he mentioned how editing makes such a big difference in the way that the films are put together. I mean, if you watch the footage from the first cut of A New Hope, it's awful. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's bad. And it's what's weird is you'll see some of the same scenes, but either without that final punch of the final cut that winds up going into theaters on film, and it just doesn't feel the same. You realize how low budget some of the stuff was, that the armor and whatnot. You take C-3PO and Luke looking for R2 in the sand speeder, or the land speeder, and... You know, we all kind of joke about it now. Now it's CGI. Before it was just the speeder with the little smudge underneath it to make it look like it was hovering. Originally, it was this crappy, old school, like bad cop drama thing where it's them in seats and a rear projection screen where they're running footage of the land rolling by. And it's like, can you fix that? Or, oh, yes, that's much better. And it's like, really? You know, this stuff looked like what it was, what it should have been from a budgetary standpoint, from the standpoint of the way Hollywood looked at Lucas's project, And they were able to use all the filmmaking skills of that collective group of minds to create something that I think magic probably is the word that captures it.
It was his wife who did the editing.
At the time.
And also, I think Star Wars itself, if you did not have John Williams doing the soundtrack, Logan's Run.
Yeah, so bad.
It would have been a different history for that movie.
And you mentioned how Lucas himself has said, and he said this a couple times, that in that great Oprah interview about how he doesn't get the magic of it. The funny thing is now I almost want to say I think Katie does, Katie Lucas, because she is the one person who has consistently written for the Clone Wars, and every time she not only reaches into the mythos, reaches into the stuff that Lucas himself has laid out, her father has laid out, but also reaches into the expanding universe and says, you know what, we're going to use this. Yeah, when she brought the Night Sisters in, they did a thing for the Blu-ray and the DVD that talked all about the great inspiration of the Night Sisters and not once mentioned the EU author who created them. Nothing about Dave Wolverton at all, creating the planet, creating the people. It was all about, well, see, there was this book about women driving society, and that may have been an inspiration for the way that was written, but it certainly wasn't where these came from. These were made beforehand. But she has been able to come out, and that wasn't really her. She was the one to come out and essentially take all these different parts of Star Wars that are loved by so many people, sometimes exclusively, the movie purists versus the EU purists. Well, if the movie in this doesn't match up, screw the movie. What? And she's been able to kind of weave it together. I think if she doesn't get the magic, then she at least has been able to be the one to grasp hold of it where we know there's some good hands for it to be in going forward. Yeah. Having her be involved is one of the best decisions a Clone Wars team's ever made.
No, that's a very good point. I have to say, going back to what you said about EU versus the movies, if you actually talk to a lot of the authors, like Mike Stackpole, Aaron Alston, those guys, they'll tell you, we play in his sandbox.
Oh, yeah.
If he decides to change the sandbox, he doesn't, you know, they'll have to adapt what they can, what they write in the future, but they're not going to get offended if what they've written is now.
Right.
It's still a paycheck.
It's not even that. It's respect for his creation. You know, he created the world. We're just playing in it. So that's why it actually kind of makes me laugh when you have some of those expanded universe purists who are like, oh, no. Now this is, you know, well, this was written, you know, now. So it's the newest and the best. It's like, yeah, but that's the world that most people know. Let's be honest, outside of maybe convention areas. I mean, I know that the Star Wars books are very popular, but they're not as popular as the movies are. So for the vast majority of population, they don't know who the Night Sisters are until it came out on Clone Wars and their kids were watching it. Yep. You know?
And, you know, there, and on the whole thing, that there are those out there that are so heavily into it. I mean, I love the EU, read it all, bought it all. Chronologically categorized it all, put it all together with the timeline gold and everything, but it boggled my mind just recently. I mean, we're talking 30 plus years into Star Wars. The EU has been around since the films, whether you're talking the 76 novel by Alan Dean Foster, the Marvel comics, or whatever afterwards. It's been around as long as Star Wars has, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't read it, but they just finished up a novel series called Fate of the Jedi, and there is of someone that's in the beginning of the series, or almost the beginning of the series, inextricably ties itself to the Clone Wars cartoon. And there were people up in arms. I was up in arms a little bit because they didn't decide who this character was until the book series was halfway done being written, because they didn't know what was coming from Lucas. And they altered the process in the middle. But to have people say, even now, this far along, we've got Leland Chee out there dealing with continuity stuff. It's not like the issue of movies versus EU is a new deal, and it's something that's still being worked out. Movies take precedence, period. That's the way it's been for decades now. You still will have people come out and say, how dare they allow this cartoon to infect the books? It just doesn't work like that. It's not supposed to. And that's where you got to realize it's a hobby and step back, or you're going to drive yourself crazy.
I mean, just a few more moments.
But this is the same company who allowed the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. You know, Mark Hamill actually said, yes, you know, when they approached him to do that movie, I told him, if you can get Lucas to approve this, sure, I'll do your movie. Fully expecting that Lucas was never going to go for it. And they came back and go, here, paperwork's all signed. They said, as long as we don't use red, green, or blue lightsaber colors, we're good. They're like, really? These things are bongs and other things, accoutrements that I can't say with the 5-year-old.
We have to have a little symbol on your program to let you hear about the other stuff.
I mean,
apparently.
Yeah, and as long as they're not these three colors, you're okay with it. You know, this is the kind of, you know, goes back to the, it's his work.
Yep.
It's not, you know, and a lot of people were up in arms about that and then were mad at Kevin Smith thinking that he didn't have approval. He's like, do you think we can get anything away without doing that? So.
Since we have a few things, I want to ask all y'all, what are y'all favorite characters in the whole series? I have one favorite character from each one of y'all.
I'll get crap, but I'll go with Cade Skywalker. If I had a boy, I would name him Cade. Cade Skywalker, the drug addict, future descendant of the Skywalker line who refuses to follow and eventually comes back. Yeah, most human of the Skywalkers, and he's somebody. No one dies for me, never again. We take what is given. If I could live by the idea of we take what is given, I've learned everything I need from the modern EU.
I'll go with Leia, because she was a good, strong role model for females when there weren't any. And she still is, in many ways.
Only because she's officially canon, I'm going to go with R2KT.
Yeah.
Because she was in the Clone Wars movie, and she has been quite a few times in the Clone Wars cartoon.
I think I've seen her in Star Tours, too.
She is in Star Tours. She is in Star Tours.
Yep.
We got a phone, that was another phone call we got from Mary Franklin going, we can make her purple. You need to let us know. She is in the encyclopedia. And she has her own action figure.
Yep.
She does. She has her own action figure. It's the San Diego Comic Con exclusive. It's what all of us dream to be.
And then you guys do the patches too. I see those things going.
Oh, we do a lot of patches. All of them go for charity.
Yeah.
We do different holiday patches and stuff like that, and they're all over Obi-Wan. What is it? Rancho Obi-Wan.
Rancho Obi-Wan.
Yeah, no, Tom better give the right answer.
Yes, real quick, Tom, who's your favorite?
Yeah. Oh, that's easy. It's Boba Fett. Yeah. It's just badass. Badass guy in Star Wars. Come on.
It has to be Corin Holman. I love Corin.
Corin's good.
He's good one too.
I mean, I like him. I like him as a Jedi now, but I like him better when he was with Rogue Squadron.
I'll tell you, in Fate of the Jedi, the only person who emotionally caused me to sit back and go, oh, was Corin Horn, being a parent, seeing what his kids went through. I'll tell you.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Guys, that's pretty much it. We're about out of time. Our next panel will be coming shortly.
Woohoo! You're all part of history.
And thank you to our panel.
We shall be around if you want to talk Star Wars. I've got one panel tomorrow, and otherwise I'm just going to be wondering. So catch me if you want to talk Star Wars.
Wondering what's all about.
No.
What's this whole Mortis thing?
What is this?
Balance of the what?
You want to hold it?